Today is the 16th of December 2007. We will continue the lesson about the Brahmanet Sutra. Page 5, about the introduction. Before we beginning the lesson, recite the name of the Buddha 3 times.
Namo Bonasu Thika Moni Patna Namo Bonasu Thika Moni Patna Namo Bonasu Thika Moni Patna.
This lesson, the introduction is, like I just told you, is quite difficult. So if you don't understand anything, stop me right away. Okay. Introduction, page 5, about the Brahmanet Sutra. Brahmanet Sutra. After the passing of the historical Buddha more than 2,500 years ago, they say historical Buddha because there are many different Buddha. And the Sakyamuni Buddha is historical. That is, you know, he has a history. And we can compare, we know which day was he born, when he was born, where he was he born, from whom was he born. But the other Buddhas, like, you know, Amida Buddha, the medicine Buddha, we might not know. They are not historical. Only Shakyamuni Buddha is historical. His teachings were codified in the Tripitaka, or three basket. Tree, you remember the Sanskrit? Tree means three. Pitaka means the basket. The basket, why? Because in the time, see, the sutra was not written in book letter. They have not invented the book like we know now. They wrote them, you know, on the leaves, or they carved them in the stone, but usually in the stone they carve only a short sentence, and that's it. They cannot make it long, because it can be very heavy. So they wrote them on the piece of leaf. These are the palm leaves. You know the palm leaves? These palm leaves, they cut in piece of like 40 centimeters. That is about 16 inches. And then they press them down, and then they dry them. They dry them first, and they press them down. So whenever they become dry, they use the ink, you know, to write on them. These pieces of like 40 centimeters, they have to pierce to make some hole. They make some hole and then they string them. They string them with some string. And they call them sutra. So sutra means something, you know, strung together in sutra. So all these sutra at the time, remember, these are long, like a packet of leaves. Like. So when they store them, how can they store it? They have to put them, you know, in a basket. Because in the time, you know, the shams or things like this, you know, very expensive. See, wood are very expensive at the time. So they have to put them in the basket to carry them. So they divide them in two, in three. The basket of the teaching of the Buddha. They call them the sutra basket. The law of the Buddha, they call them the Vinaya basket. And the teaching of the, or explanation of the teachers, not the Buddha. They call them the Abhidharma basket. So three basket, Tripitaka. Or three baskets, sutra, commentaries, and precepts. Sutra means the teaching of the Buddha. Commentaries mean the explanation from the masters. And precepts, the Vinaya. The Brahmanet Sutra is part of both the basket of sutra and the basket of precepts. Because before on these precepts, there are a lot of teaching of the Buddha Varukana and Sakyamuni. So it belongs to both baskets. And contains the Bodhisattva precepts, the highest moral code in Mahayana. Bodhisattva, we understand, right? Bodhi means wisdom. Sattva means sentient being. We can understand it either a light being is Bodhisattva, wise being, or to give the sentient being the wisdom. The Bodhisattva either is the one who has wisdom, or the one who gives to all the sentient beings the wisdom. Is Bodhisattva. So you see it here. They explain here. I explain also of this because sometimes you don't understand. The precepts, you look at the footnote. precepts, vows of moral code, moral conduct, of moral conduct taken by lay and ordained Buddhists. You understand, right? Lay mean the ones who stay home like us, and ordained mean the one who go into monastery. There are 5 vows for lay Buddhists, so you know that. 250 for fully ordained monks, and 58 for Bodhisattva. That is the one, you know, we learn now. The 10 great precepts and 48 life precepts. Lay or ordained. Because Bodhisattva may be lay or ordained. Some monks will take also the precept of Bodhisattva, but some monks might not take them, especially the one from Theravada. They don't know about the Bodhisattva precept, and they don't take them. So they still eat meat. So the Bodhisattva precepts belong to the Mahayana, the highest modern folk in Mahayana. Precepts are for guarding against transgression and stopping evil, 2 things. That is, transgression means that we act bad, and stopping the evil, the same thing. Again, transgression stems from the 3 karma of body, speech, and mind. You understand what I mean, right? If you don't understand, stop me right away, so I can explain. The 3 karma, karma means whatever we act. Karma means acting. The act, just acting. Whenever we act, you know, we do some good or some bad karma. If we do good, we have good karma. If we do bad, we have bad karma. And all the karmas will come from 3 things. Because like a human, we can have only these 3. Coming from the mouth, from the body, and from the mind. And from the mouth, the most thing. And most of the time, we don't think about it. The precepts are divided into 4 aspects. Exception, restraint, maintenance, violations. So in Vietnamese, you know, your parents, usually when they learn about that, they call them the chi gia, chi pha. Exception means that, like, you're not supposed to drink alcohol. That's a precept. Now, exception means that, like, you know, if you're coughing and your mom gives you some cough syrup and you read it, 2% alcohol, you cannot take it. No, you can take it. That's exception, because you're sick, not because you like to drink alcohol. So that's exception. Restraint means normal. Whatever is precept, is that means restraint. You cannot do it. Like, you know, a precept say you cannot steal. So it means you cannot steal. That's easy to understand. That's restraint. Don't do it. Maintenance. Maintenance means you have to keep it all the time. You don't say that, well, I just took the precepts, but now no, I'm not in the temple. I go out and I have some friends who bring me to the church. I go to their church. So now, no, in the communion, they offer each one, like, you know, especially the Protestant church, they give a small cup of wine. Now, in Catholic church, you know, they don't do that. But the Protestant church, you have to have a small cup of wine. And if you drink it, well, you say, oh, okay, so I have it to go. But you can refuse it. That means that you can tell them, well, I'm Buddhist, I'm not Christian. Usually, if you say, I'm not Christian, they don't offer it to you. But somehow, if you feel uneasy, so you say, you just keep quiet. Now you commit something, right? Just say, I'm not Christian, sorry. I can't drink or sing something like this. That's all right. But if you do it, so that means that you don't maintain it. If you are like too shy to say it, you don't maintain your precepts. And violation, of course, like this. So all these, you know, are the same, except for the exception. Exception, they are exception. So then, you know, precepts are not, you know, like for you to, you know, to prohibit you to do everything. It's like in common law. In common law, I mean, in the worldly law, that's what they call by the law of the Good Samaritan. That is, you know, if you want to help anybody, and then you hurt, you make some harm, you will not be prosecuted. It's like, you know, you see some people, you know, dropping on the floor. There's no pulse. You go and you try to do the CPR on them. And then you call 911 and waiting for the people from the emergency to come in picking her or him up. Now, while you do the CPR, you might break a rib. And then this person is brought to the hospital. And then they found out that, you know, they can resuscitate this person. But then they found out that the person has a broken rib. And the family say that this person has never had broken rib before. So this guy or this burner should have broken the rib. They can sue. They can sue. Because that's what we combine the law of the of good Samaritan. That is, if you just want to help, it's not, you know, because you dislike this guy or this girl. And then you see, ah, this is the occasion, I come here. Okay, because you hate them, that's different. But if you really, you know, didn't know that guy, you just want to help. That's the law of good Samaritan applied in that case. So in the precept of the Buddha, it's the same. Exception, you know, means that, like I just explained to you, you're coughing and then your mom gave you some cough syrup which contains some alcohol. Take it. Sometimes exceptions are made so that you are not considered to have violated the precept, even if you have acted against it. Restrain, refer. Okay, this you can read at home, you understand. Bodhisattva, those who aspire to supreme enlightenment and Buddhahood for themselves and all beings. The word Bodhisattva can therefore stand for realized beings such as Avalokiteshvara or Samantabhadra, but also for anyone who has developed the body mind, the aspiration to save oneself and others. Avalokiteshvara, that means Kwannam Bodhisattva, and Samantabhadra for Hien Bodhisattva. Kwannam, you know her, right? Avalokiteshvara used to be he, but somehow, you know, Vietnamese and Chinese people like making her him or he. I mean, making him or her. So well, now you see all this. Oh, you see this big statue, the white statue. This woman, unless you know, he cross-dressed, I don't know. But this is Bodhisattva. Because the Kuan Yin. Kuan Yin is Avalokiteshvara. See, because they interpret like this, that Bodhisattva, Avalokiteshvara, he can transform into any kind of form, a sentient being. It's not, you know, to show off, but like, you know, okay. Suppose like he wants to appear and come to our temple. He's supposed, you know, to speak Vietnamese. Because if he doesn't speak Vietnamese, the older people, they wouldn't understand. So then she would transform him into this wild lady outside. Like Vietnamese and speak Vietnamese to them, so they understand. But so Avalokiteshvara, you know, that's big. We call them a Mahas Bodhisattva Mahasattva. That is, you know, Bodhat Mahatat. That is big Bodhisattva. Samantabhadra is what in Vietnamese they call him for him. You see him usually, you know, riding on an elephant, a white elephant with six tusks. You remember before, we learned about him before. Samantabhadra, you know, he has 10 vows, and really big vows too. But also for anyone who had developed the body mind. So basically, Bodhisattva, like we said last time, Bodhisattva in training. That is, you know, like you. You will receive the precept, or even if you don't receive precept, you have to follow these anyway. That's because, you remember we told before, right? It is not because you take the precept that you have to follow the precept. It's like, you know, you say, I have a driver's license, so I have to follow on this. So now, you know, I don't take the driver's license. And I take the car, I drive, I go. So if I make an accident, I don't have to follow to accept the rule. Can you say something like this? Go to jail and double. You don't have license. So it's the same. Even if you don't take the precept, you will have to follow the precept anyway. Because if you don't follow the precept, you will commit some sin or some like bad things. Like, you know, in the precept they say that you cannot kill. Let me say, I don't take the precept, so I go kill someone. Of course, you know, you'll be in jail or you will be killed by some guy else. So you better follow the precept. So Bodhisattva is the one, you know, who agreed. The Bodhisattva idea, you know, is in Mahayana. You remember? Mahayana is Maha means big. Yana is the will. So this big will, Hinayana is the small will. Big will means that to carry everyone. Small will means carry ourselves. Like, you know, if I think that, oh, I sit down, I do some zazen, that's good for me, I get some enlightenment. Or I go to pray Amitabha, and go to the Western Paradise, things like this. I am practicing the Hinayana. I try to deliver myself only. That's Hinayana. Uh-huh. Sitting down does not mean Mahayana. reciting the name of the Buddha does not mean Mahayana. That depends on the concept of the mind, on the state of your mind. If you are like this year, but also for anyone who had a Lord Buddha mind, the aspiration to save oneself and others, that is, you know, you go to the temple, you just say, oh, this is for Buddha. You take a broom, right? And you sit. That's it. See? And you say, this is not your house, boy. No, I don't care. If you do something like that, you have a bodhisattva mind. You're acting like a bodhisattva. And you say that, well, hey, this temple is dirty. Tell Dr. Duke, come here, wipe it, clean it. This is not Mahayana. It's not bodhisattva mind. Because you consider it like, you know, something else. You don't belong there. So you are in this world, in this universe. You belong to it. You are one part of it. Take care of it. Never consider it as something like, you know, that belongs to someone else. Of course, you know, there are laws, rules. Like, you know, somebody out house, you come in and you try to flip the floor, clean up the house. Okay, you go to jail, right? Because they don't agree with you. But then now, you know, this is common. Not too much, but you understand. Bodhisattva is the one who really, you know, is not egoist. What is the alignment of everyone? Transmission of the sutra. Now, this Paulo explained about the history of this sutra. According to tradition, around the time of Bodhidharma arrived in China, the Indian Yogacara master Paramahansa, who was residing in China, heard about the existence of this, that taught the modern code of the Bodhisattva. We just want to understand. I just go briefly, okay? Because we cannot, you know, make a history class now. But basically, Bodhidharma, you know him, right? Bodhidharma used to be a prince. And he belonged to, like, to the 6th century, Satan, 5th century. You know Bodhidharma? We have his picture up in the back of the picture of the Buddha. You see, on the altar, you see up front, we have the Buddha, two big bodhisattvas, the Siddhartha Sutta, or the whole earthworm bodhisattva, and the Kuan Yin, who is the Avalokiteshvara woman. Now, just behind the statue of the Buddha, you see, this is what we call by the altar of the masters. And the big one, you know, on the wall, painted, is the picture of Bodhidharma. You saw him? Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma is the one, you know, who transmitted the Zen to the Chinese people. So usually we call him the big master. The big master, master with the capital M. Because we're supposed to venerate all the masters, but we cannot put all of the picture of them. So he's like the big master. Original master is Shakyamuni Buddha, of course, in front. So, Bodhidharma was the one who transmitted the Zen to the Chinese. Now, if you don't know him, well, probably know you go home and try to watch some movie. But basically, it's like that. He arrived in China. The Indian Yogacara Master Paramahansa. Paramahansa was another master, another monk. Yogacara Master, Yogacara, Judya. This is later on, you know, after Wing Chun, in the time of Paramahansa, we didn't have the term mind-only school. Now, mind-only school, you understand. But in the time of Bodhidharma and Paramahansa, there was no of this term. So they called it Yogacara. That's the same thing. That's about the yoga. Yoga means to sit down, meditate, and realize. That's Yogacara. Yogacara is the school. And Paramahansa was one of these masters, old masters. And this Paramahansa, he has translated a lot of the sutras. And after he translates a lot of these other sutras, the king asked him, heard about the existence of texts that taught the modern code of the Bodhisattva. See? Because whenever they brought on these Vinaya, that is, you know, the law, the precepts, they brought only the one for the monks and the nuns. And the lay people, of course, you know, there were, but only 5 precepts or 10 precepts. But for the Bodhisattva, that's a different school. Bodhisattva, you know, means these precepts, whenever you take, be careful with this, remember. Bodhisattva stay with you forever and ever and ever. Because it stay in your mind. The other precepts stay with your human, your fall. Whenever you die, that's it. Like if you take precept to become a monk or nun, you shave your head, you do everything, you sit down like this, you have. But whenever you die, that's it. If you go somewhere, no more problem. But if you come back, you will be reborn like another kid. Exactly like another kid. That's it. You're not monk when you were born. Right? So even if you receive all the precepts of the monk when you die, that's it. But the precept of Bodhisattva, whenever you die, the precepts stay with you. Next year, next life, you know, whenever you were born, wherever you were born, in which form are you born, you still keep the Bodhisattva precept with you. So that explains, you know, how come, you know, some people, you know, just come to the temple. How come some people, you know, just become a monk? How come some people, you know, are like drawn to Buddhism instead of other stuff? So you see, this is a big difference. And this difference, you know, we have it only, this distinction we have only in Mahayana Buddhism. And this is very good, because this, like I told you last time, this is how, you know, the Buddhism will stay with us forever. See, because if we don't understand about this Bodhisattva concepts, now Buddhism, you know, die out. It will die out, because the world, you know, is controlled by politics. You know that, right? If, like, you know, we have a dictatorship, or we live in a country where we have a bad king, like in the time, they can eradicate everything. They can impose anything. So they say, you cannot go to the temple anymore. Destroy all the temples. Now we have to destroy all the temples. Like we just told you last time about the Meiji, you know, the Japanese Meiji. See, all the monks, you know, must take wife. So they destroy it. So the monks in Japan, they cannot wear the yellow robe. And they're smart, because they have to wear the black robe, which is bad. Which is bad, which does not represent the monk. So they wear only a small piece of kesa, they call them rakusu. If you go to the Zen people, you see, some American monks nowadays, they receive the transmission from these Zen monks. They receive only the rakusu. They don't wear the kesa. They call them the kesa, but they can wear. Now, if they really take the precept of the monk, 250, they can wear them. That's different. Distinction between the form and the mind. Bodhisattva precept is precept of mind. Whenever you accept them, it stays with you forever, even when you die. So that is the reason why all the Bodhisattva of the three times of all the corners of the world will protect you, will gather, you know, and try not to do something. You cannot understand it. In Buddhism, we have a word, they call them unbelievable. But khả tư nghĩ, that is unbelievable. Unbelievable. That sometimes you cannot imagine how come this happened. You drive the car, and then boom, and then somehow you feel like, you know, somebody, you know, taking you off or carry you up. You cannot understand that. And some people, if you say such a thing to other people, they think that, oh, this guy is superstitious. You just have a quick reaction, right? It's up to them to decide. But what I mean, you see that? Now at the time, they heard about the moral code of the Bodhisattva, but they couldn't find them. What are they? And do the thing like this. And that was good, because the monks will try to teach the king, the ruler of these countries. And you see, these countries, if the king or the ruler of the country accept the Bodhisattva code, they will act good. They avoid killing, they avoid to give harm to sentient beings. They try to educate people more than like a reprimand, right? Like, you know, if the people make some fault, commit some infraction, they don't judge, okay, chop off their head, cut their hands, something like this, but then they will try to say, sit down. You see, this is not good. Do you really see that? You didn't act good, you were too angry. Try to control it. So they can correct them. This is what they call by the Bodhisattva mind. And if these monks, you know, can teach the rulers and the kings about taking the Bodhisattva precept, the country will become good, and the people, you know, will not suffer. So this Paramatta, he is also a Yogacara master. That is master who teach about the Maitreya school. Now they call the Maitreya school. But at the time of Bodhidharma, there was no system. The term Maitreya school is formed only after Huyen Chan. Huyen Chan, he was the real monk from the Teiyuki, from the monkey. You know this movie? He is really monk. This monk is Huyen Chan. But in the monkey story, they just make him like a fabulous. It's not really. Because you see, when I was small, I liked this story. There was no movie at the time. Remember? There was no movie about that because they couldn't make it. It was all in black and white anyway. I read the story and I like it. Okay, he's monk. He have some disciple, the monkey, thing like this. And the monkey is good. He just pull out some hair and then, and he transformed it to 100 or million or 1,000 of different monkey, all the monkeys, right? And he has all these powers. And then, this monk, he go here, he was like, like eaten by a devil. Have you read this story? You remember the time when Huyen Chan become pregnant? Okay, and he got abortion. Okay, go home and read it. It's funny. Fabulous, but it's funny. So, I go home and read it. You understand something about that. But what I mean here is that Huyen Chan was the one who brought on these texts about Yogacara back in China later. And then he was master. And so he invented the word Maitreya in the time. So Yogacara means Maitreya, was residing in China. And he immediately returned to India and succeeded in acquiring the entire Brahmana Sutra on 61 chapters. However, as Paramatha was sailing toward China with his treasure, a sudden storm arose and his ship began to sink. Piece by piece, all the baggage was thrown overboard, but to no avail. Finally, Paramatha had no choice but to let go of the Brahmana Sutra, after which the ship miraculously righted itself. Paramatha then realized the sad truth. The people of the Eastern Kingdom, that is China, were not yet ready for the Brahmana Sutra. That is, you see, like we just told you before, there's something we call them unbelievable. It's not because you want it that you can get it. Sometimes you don't even want it, suddenly you get it. Sometimes that happens, and you don't understand why or how. And you say some people are like, oh, that's just a fortune. But it's not really. The current version of the sutra dates from the 5th century, so Paramatha couldn't get it. It was one of the major works of Kumarajiva, the preeminent translator of Buddhist texts from Sanskrit into Chinese, who himself intoned the Bodhisattva precepts every day as part of his cultivation. Kumarajiva is like a big translator. Kumarajiva was the one who translated the Lotus Sutra. And he translated a lot of all the sutra too. And when he came to the king, make him a bureau of translation. That is, assign like nearly 1,000 translators to him. So his translation from Kumarajiva, is very good and very authoritative. Whenever he translates, it's not like we nowadays, we just sit down and try to have some dictionary and try to translate. Like a thousand of learned people sit down in a big hall, big amphitheater like this, auditorium. And then one monk or one person try to read the text in Sanskrit, in original. He read a phrase and then people start to translate. And then Kumarajiva, we tell them which word is which, and then he asked which word we have equivalent in Chinese. And then some people we say something, and then they decide on the best for them. So then this is collective translation. And since they are all learned people, so the translation is very good, because they correct right away. You see, we see that, thus have I heard. If you translate into Vietnamese, and you translate like some monkey nowadays, they say, như vậy tôi nghe. Well, that's translation. That is not Vietnamese. Because in Vietnamese, we have only the active form. We don't have passive form. If you speak Vietnamese, you say the cow is eaten by the tiger. You can say it. Like in English, that's right. The cow is eaten by the tiger. But if you say it in Vietnamese, you cannot say, con bò bị ăn bởi con cọp. There's no Vietnamese. You have to say con cọp ăn con bò. In Vietnamese, there is no passive form. That is, you say, tôi ăn cơm. You cannot say, cơm bị ăn bởi tôi. Right? You see, you laugh because it is not Vietnamese. Right? You cannot use the passive voice. So in each language, we have different kind of form. In Chinese, it's different. So you see, like Chinese and Sanskrit are different. They have different grammar too. So they have to decide on it. So Kumarajiva was good. Now, you have the footnote here, Kumarajiva, he translated Mahaprana Diamond Sutra. But I just give a note, footnote here. This is like a romantic Kumarajiva, the name. Kumarajiva. Some people know nowadays, they have the family name. The family name, usually in Vietnamese, we have only like less than 100 family. Trăm họ, that is less than 100. Like Nguyễn, Lê, Lý, Trần, whatever. See, like 100. Now, some people, when they marry a girl, a woman, in the time of this, they don't count. But nowadays, they try to combine. If the father is Nguyễn and the mother is Lê, so the son or the girl or the daughter will name Nguyễn Lê something. Right? They combine the family name. Kumarajiva is the same. But they don't combine the family name. They combine their name. Kumara is the name of the father, and Jiva is the name of the mother. Is it romantic in the time? Yeah, that was a long time ago. That was in the 4th century. In the 4th century, the woman was nothing. Remember in the time? So, but then we see Kumara Jiva. You see the name? That's different. So some people know in Vietnamese, because you don't read Vietnamese, but in Vietnamese, you know, some people will say, how come he translates the name in Kumala Thap? You see, Kumala means the transliteration of Kumara, Sanskrit. Jiva, if they transliterate, it would be Kiva. So the name would be say Kumala Kiva. But they don't say Kumala Kiva, they say Kumala Thap. Thap is the meaning of Jiva. Thap means 10. So how come? Because 10 Jiva, Kiva is the name of the mother, and Kumara is the name of the father. So this translator, this monk, he named Kumara Jiva. His name is combined from the mother and the father. See it now? See, so the Buddhism, you know, is good. You can learn anything from Buddhism. So he's low. That, what I mean, see, that his parents must really love him, right? To give him such a name like this. Who himself intoned the Bodhisattva precept every day as part of the cultivation. So Kumarajiva was also took the Bodhisattva precept. So he knows about the Bodhisattva precepts. It's like you nowadays, you see. If you take the Bodhisattva precept, now we will know if you have taken the Bodhisattva precept in your previous life or not. Because if you have, you will take it without problem. You had them before. But if you, even if you take, want to take them, you subscribe to it, you learn, you take course, and then somehow, you know, you cannot take it. You know that, you know, you never take it. You never take it. We must understand this. So the Kumarajiva, you know, he had the Bodhisattva precept before. He recited the sutra aloud, and with the assistance of his translation bureau, rendered it into Chinese. The Brahmana Sutras presented in this book is the second part of the 10th chapter of the Sanskrit text. Because like we just said before, right? This is the sutra. The first part, you know, is really the sutra, the teaching of the Buddha only. But now, you know, it's the precept. So it belongs to another basket. Characteristic of the sutra. The Brahmana Sutra belongs to the same period as the Avatamsaka Sutra, the first teaching period of the Buddha immediately following his enlightenment. It is part of the sudden teaching preached to Bodhisattva and other advanced beings while he was in Samadhi. This, you have to learn about the Mahayana to know. We said about that before, but I don't know if you follow the course, you know, regularly. If you did, well, you don't have any difficulty in understanding it. But basically, you know, the Mahayana system, this master, Chi Khai, Thiên Thai, he divided in like a 5 period. Hoa Nghiêm Tối Sơ Tam Thất Nhập, that's in Chinese. A Hàm Thập Nhị Mười Phương Quảng Bát Vị Thập Nhị Niên Bát Nhã Đàm Pháp Hoa Niết Bàn Cục Bát Niệm Hoa Nghiêm Tối Sơ Tam Thất Nhật Ha Hoa Nghiêm Minh The Avatamsaka. Avatamsaka is the first one the Buddha taught in 21 days. 21 days? 80 volumes like this book. And this one too. Why? Because he taught it to the Bodhisattva, to the Deva, to the gods. First teaching of the Buddha, he didn't teach to the human first. He taught to the Deva. When he became enlightened, he sit like a 49 days. And you say that, well, what did he do there? He just walked around. He taught it to all these people on the Deva. We don't see them. Because now we have not been enlightened yet like him. We don't see them. But in Mahayana, we believe in them. Yes, you will believe in them. So they are Deva, they are gods, they are Bodhisattva. So the Buddha now talked to them about this. So Avatamsaka Sutra now, it has been translated by Thomas Cleary. Thomas Cleary. So if you can read only in English, you can read it, but you have to buy it. Because it's copyright, we can put them on the web. And if you can read Vietnamese, that's better because it's on the web. Avatamsaka Sutra is the teaching for the Bodhisattva. We will learn about that because, see, whenever we recite this sutra, these precepts, it will be said about all these 10 things, 10 grounds. All these, you know, were told, explained in the Avatamsaka Sutra. The first teaching of the period immediately followed his enlightenment. You understand why, right? It is part of the certain teaching preached to Bodhisattva and all the advanced beings while he was in Samadhi. That is why the Buddha... See, historically speaking, the Buddha became enlightened only in the seventh week. He sat for 7 weeks, 49 days. So he became last. So, but before he got enlightened, he was in Samadhi. He sit down and meditate. And when he sit down and meditate like that, he talked to the gods and all the sentient beings here. So, mind and my ground. Now we have this concept. Now, you might be too young to understand about that, but it's not really too long. My ground in Tâm Địa. There is a sutra called the King Tâm Địa Quán, observation of the my ground. The Brahma Sutra represents the highest moral code of the Mahayana canon. It is the highest because keeping the Bodhisattva precepts liberates the practitioner from greed, anger, and delusion. If you can be delivered from these poisons, you become Buddha, right? But you don't want to become Buddha. Because if you become Buddha, no, you just sit there. You vow to save all the sentient beings. Like, you know, you say, you want to become something. Like, I want to become a politician, right? Some people think like this. So, you start to learn about politics. And where can you learn? Go to law school first. You go to law school, you get some, like, a Bachelor of Law, something like this, or even Doctor of Law, and then you try to get into politics. You get to network with this guy, that guy, go to this party, that party, and everything. So, well, after you go on this stuff, you will try, you know, to become a president. You run for president. And when you run for president, you see nowadays, we are in like a hot debate nowadays. You see, what do? They promise the things. And they say, when I become president, I will give you money, I will do this, I will cut tax, I will do everything. And does anyone say that? Well, I love you so much, you know, I will help you, you know, to learn. If you need computer, you have a computer, everyone. But then, you know, since we need money to pay for the computers, I make you work for this. Would you work for them? No, of course, right? So then, you know, whenever they promise you something, they must lie to you, or they at least they hide something from you. You cannot get anything for free. So then, you know, I say that, well, I will give you $5,000 when you have a baby. Where do they get the money? All the people will have to pay for them. Or, you know, they will tax you. You pay for yourself. That is something. Or, you see, like in other countries, you see, that doesn't happen in the United States very clearly, but in other countries you see it. That's what we call by inflation. You understand inflation, right? That is, you see, we just bring out the money. You want $5,000? I give you $5,000. This guy, $10,000. Okay, $10,000. Here, here. You need more money? Bring them out. Money. So then, now you have like a $100. You can buy like a Game Boy, right? No, I mean 120, 30, right? 130, you can buy a Game Boy. Next month, you go to the store, say, 500. What? 500? Yes, because now your 500 is only worth $130 before. Because they just churn out the money. You know, the countries like Vietnam, you see that? Like, you know, now you have to carry like $1 million to buy something. That's crazy, right? And they have already devalued the money. That is 500 dong, earn only 1 dong before. That is, they devalued 500 times like that, many times. And now you still have to use like $1 million. You want to buy a ticket from United States to Vietnam? 50 million, at most. I mean, you know, the cheapest one is 50 million Vietnamese money. You say million. So this is devaluation, this is inflation. So what I mean here, the reason you see is that we said liberate the practitioner from greed, anger, and delusion. That is, you know, a real bodhisattva, we say that. Look, get it straight. You cannot, you know, get anything free. Either you will get it really hard or less hard, but you still have to earn it. So the bodhisattva, what they do is they try to enlighten the being. They say that, well, if you just, you know, go and buy some lottery ticket every month and wish for $1 million, forget about it. Now save this money and try to earn the money and save your money so you will get $1 million. Now that is why, that is the bodhisattva thing. And return him to his self-nature or true mind, to Buddhahood. That is, to have all the sentient beings to become Buddha, to become enlightened. That is the idea of the bodhisattva. That's different, because at first you think that, well, when I go to the temple, I become Buddhist, I just want enlightenment for myself. I just want to become enlightened, I become wiser, that's good. But then, you know, that's egoist. Whenever you think something, you know about something, you think that, I'm cool, I know about this sutra, I know about this meaning, I know who is Kumarajiva. This guy, he doesn't know it, so I'm better than him. Oh, I don't think can him. Hey, you know what, who's Kumarajiva? You don't know it, see? Oh, you don't know it. So I'm better than him. That is what we call by the egoism at the time. But a bodhisattva should teach him. If you don't know it, I explain to you. That's bodhisattva. Bodhisattva and have the difference. We just say, so this big word, but he said, who then are those disciples of the Buddha who take upon themselves the inconceivable task of rescuing and protecting all sentient beings? In the Mahayana tradition, they are called bodhisattva. We said that, right? The word immediately brings to mind the most excellent figure in Buddhism, Manchuri. Manchuri is Bantu Siloy. Samantabhadra, you already know, right? Kohien. Avalokiteshvara, you know, Kwannon. But Manchuri, if you have never heard about him, that's bad, because he's good. He represents the wisdom. The wisdom. Manchuri, usually, they figure him sitting on a green lion. On a green lion, carrying a sword. So some people will say, hey, he's like, you know, a bodhisattva, he carries a sword, killing people. No. This symbolizes the cutting of ignorance. You understand? So the sword means the cutting of ignorance. Because most of the time, we don't want to get rid of ignorance. We like ignorance. We love ignorance. Ignorance makes us feel good, right? Makes us happy, right? Like, you know, we remember the Four Noble Truths. The first one is the suffering, dukkha. Dukkha means something which are not pleasant to us. And the origin of suffering. The second one, what is the origin of suffering? Remember that? The hoarding, the gathering. So we say, but if I have a Game Boy, if I have a Wii, if I have PCP, PS3, everything, and big screen TV, and you know, the plasma, and things like that. The more I have, the more I feel happy, right? You think that, because it's ignorance. But suppose, no, well, suddenly, you know, it's broke down. What happened? You will feel suffering. You will have suffering. And then, you know, you have everything. And someday you come back home, the window is broken, and you come in, nothing in the house. You will suffer more. And that was due to the ignorance. And if somebody say that, try not to hold too much. You have only two hands. One hand you can play the Game Boy, another hand you can take the Wii. And eyes, you know, you can watch the TV. And you listen to M3, MP3, whatever. So how can you multitasking more than that? You remember the Joe? Joe? No. My name is Joe, the song. We have to finish this lesson. So Mansuri, you know, the smart, representing the wisdom, the three big bodhisattvas. On a more modern level, the bodhisattva is any being who has developed the body mind. The body mind we learned last time. That is eight words, you remember? Two things. Thượng cầu Phật đạo hào hóa chúng sanh. We learned last time. You remember that, right? If you don't remember, I tell you, go home. Go to chuahaiduc.org. On the left side, there's a whole bunch of wording things like this. Try to find the liturgy of Bodhisattva precept. Right? This one. Liturgy of Bodhisattva precept in tiny word like this because you have a sharp eye. So you can click on them. You click on them, we have on this. And you go to this page. There's this whole thing. In it, near the top, you know, we have the explanation of last time. I already put them on the web. So you can click on it and listen right away if you have broadband. If you don't have broadband, right click and save it. Because if you don't have broadband, who doesn't have broadband? Nobody, right? Must be living, you know, in the country or something. Okay. You cannot download any movie with that. Okay, so remember that, right? You can listen to them if you want. And remind, I try not to put today's explanation on it too. Quick. So if you miss anything, you know, you can review it. Because we have to review. The mind, the same nature is not the bodhisattva and Allahat. On the more modern level, the term applies to anyone who has taken the bodhisattva precept. So whenever you take the bodhisattva precept, you don't be shy. You are bodhisattva. But don't brag, because there is one precept saying that, do not brag. Because whenever you brag like that, you know, all the people will feel inferior to you. Right? And that's not good for them, for you too. The essence of bodhisattvahood is an unequivocal affirmation of social altruistic. Altruistic means, last time you remember we explained it, love of other people. Nature of humankind. Whatever enlightenment one gains, it must be shared by one fellow being. The bodhisattva is a man of inexhaustible vows. That is, he vows a lot of things. Everything he vows. He vows to save sentient beings. Every sentient being. That's difficult. Without this, he is not himself. That is, a bodhisattva who acts bad, who hurts sentient beings, you know, is not a bodhisattva. To save the world, to bring on his fellow being up to the same level of thought and feeling where he himself is, and not to rest, not to enter into nirvana until this is accomplished. However, if we're not alone and how we start, maybe this is the bodhisattva. So that is the reason why. No, you see, this is why, you know, I explained to you. The bodhisattva precepts stay with you forever. Right? This life and the next life and the past life, probably. Just wait until you receive the precept to see. If there's any problem with it, probably no, you never took the precept before. And you have done something bad, which, you know, obstruct this. Like, you know, some people, you know, who want to go to a temple or who want to, like, some people say that, well, I want to go to the team to become cheerleader. Like, that guy cheerleader nowadays, right? So say, I want to become cheerleader. But if you come and then suddenly, you know, everything go fine for you, that's good. Probably, you know, everything runs smooth. But they come and they say, oh, you're too fat. Oh, you're too thin. You cannot jump high. You think, oh, that's bad, right? And then even, you know, if you buy everything and then they pass, and then whenever you go to practice, you will be late, or you go and there's some accident. Now, this is the sign that you cannot take it. in Ramana Sutra, the compassionate figure of the Bodhisattva in contrast with the followers with the two vehicles. That is the voice hearer. We learned about that before. The voice hearer, or the one who realized enlightenment only for themselves. Iconographically, that is, you know, in the picture, in icon. Nowadays you call them avatar, right? You go on the internet and then you get your picture, you know, like handsome boy, girl, things. Called avatar, that's icon. And depicted in elderly shaven head monks clad in yellow robe, yellow saffron, not really yellow, bright yellow, because that's against the rule. And holding a begging bowl or a staff, they stand stiffly with compressed lips and they're introducing nothing. The Bodhisattva, by way of contrast, are all beautiful young prince. James, not the Tyra. Tyra means like the one, you know, for the beauty queen, right? So they look like drag queen, right? The Bodhisattva, yeah, beautiful young prince, and with Tyra, sparkling their brow, while their nobly proportional limbs are clad in light garment of colossium. And they wear seal. They wear gold bracelet and string of jewels, and round their neck hang garland of fragrant flower. What they mean is that these are all pretty things. Because we remember in the time, they have this concept that people who are well-to-do, who are rich, who are wealthy, don't touch anything. So they grow long nails, right? Remember that? On these, you know, literate people in the time, they wear long nails. They're not supposed to cut them. They have long hair, and they wear all this stuff. Whenever they wear robe, you know, long and flowing like this. Just imagine, you know, how can you wear this stuff and go to work on the farm? How go to water the land? You can do it. So they have the concept in the time that when to do people know, don't have to touch anything. They have servants, protection. Precepts in Buddhism, all precepts can be grouped into two main categories. Okay, we have to stop here. That's a small piece only, because we run out of time. See you next time. Now, before we initiate, just hold on. Now for the whole room, we try. You want to recite in Vietnamese or in English? You have to learn how to recite it. Probably in English, right? That's in page 110, the left side. If you want to see it, page 110. I dedicate these merits and virtues to everyone, everywhere, so that all sentient beings and I achieve Buddhahood together. This one, I'm sorry, because this one is Vietnamese, but it is in from Chinese, translate. You're lucky, guys, because you learn something. Whenever we recite the sutras, we tung kinh, we recite all the sutras. See it? It's not invented by some guys. See, because like I told you before, some people nowadays, they don't understand about that. They just say that, oh, you have to see that. No, don't say that. Oh, they're stupid. Simply stupid, ignorant. Because these are taken from the sutras. These four versions is taken from the sutra, the Lotus Sutra. You go home, you read them. It's in the sutra. So everything, you know, from the sutra, the reciting, whenever we do king, we recite all the sutra, but in condensed form, extract form. So we get a lot of merits. That is the reason why, you see, guys, I tell you, go recite the sutra. Sometimes you don't understand that. You say, oh, yeah, I don't understand. But these, you know, are like, they take like these four verses from the Lotus Sutra. The Tam Tự Quy, Tự Quy, Phật Sinh, Vật Chúng Sinh, Thế Theo Đạo Cả. These are not taken from the Avatamsaka Sutra. You see it? We just learned about the Avatamsaka Sutra. So all these forms, you see, page 110. Only, like, you know, half a page. Whenever you read this page, you read two sutras. The Lotus Sutra and the Avatamsaka Sutra. And these are taken literally from the sutras. You read the sutras, you'll find these. So don't take them lightly. Don't change the word in the Tụng Kinh. Whenever you Tụng Kinh, try to recite word by word. Because you are not supposed to change the teaching of the Buddha. But now you can, you don't can say it in Vietnamese. You can say in Vietnamese, try to say it. So to learn something. Later on, whenever you recite the precepts, you can recite all in English with you. Or you stay home, you can go to the temple and you recite by yourself. I thought, now we recite in Vietnamese. Nguyện đem công đức này hướng về khắp tất cả đệ tử và chúng sinh đều chọn thành